la nena mala, muchos corazones clavados en el sofá de mi sala. Todavía recuerdo lo que le dije aquella mañana. Es la primera que quiero como la vara.
Mami, que hoy Good afternoon, Medford. This is Chatting with Molly. It is 12:06 in the afternoon. You are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. I have some guests with me. Guests, do you want to introduce yourself and we can make sure your mics are working?
Okay. My name is Claire. Hello.
Hello.
I'm Fina.
Nice. Welcome to the show. Fina, I think you've been on the show before.
I have.
But this is Claire's first time. And wait, Claire, what mic do you have by chance? What
number? It says number 3.
Okay, perfect. So, welcome to the show. And as we like to start in the classic Chatting with Molly fashion, we will ask both of you guys what you had for breakfast and go from there. So, who wants to start?
Well, for breakfast this morning, yeah. I had some yogurt with some raspberries and blueberries and a little bit of honey on top.
Wow, that's breakfast. So beautiful.
It was beautiful.
Fien?
Run a little low on breakfast okay. in okay. my house right now. So it wasn't my best breakfast. I had a bagel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bagels are pretty good.
It was my last bagel.
Oh. Okay.
Don't know what I'm going to do
for
here.
I finished my fruit and my yogurt this morning.
Okay.
So.
Okay, probably.
I'm glad you didn't ask me tomorrow.
Where do you get your bagels?
I have been purchasing from Trader Joe's.
Okay.
They're not optimal, I would okay. say.
May I suggest an optimal way to acquire bagels?
You may.
So, have you heard of the app Food for All?
No.
Okay, first of all, there's this app that I actually learned about last spring, and then in my job last summer, we had like a bunch of different startups in one space, and they were the table next to my company, and so I actually got to know them pretty well, but it's this app where it helps food waste and just connects people who want like cheap food at inconvenient times. So the Davis Square Donuts and Bagels, which is really good, has from 2:30 to 4:30 every single day, you can go and get 6 bagels for $3.50 or 3 donuts for $3.50. And they're like massive fancy donuts. Wow. Maybe it's like $4 or something, but you can do it through this Food for All app. And you can, it's every day from 2:30 to 4:30.
That's so cool.
That's hype.
Yeah, and this app is amazing because like Yoshi's, which those of you who don't go to Tufts, is this like sushi restaurant really close to campus. From 8:30 to 10:30 p.m. every night, you can get like a bento box with all their like food that they maybe were going to throw away, or like extra tempura, miso, rice, and then some type of main dish that they have. You can go get it for like $6 instead of $11.50. And it's pretty hype, I would say.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hop, check it out.
Yeah. So that's where you should get your bagels. So how are you guys doing today? What's up in your life? Want to share any anecdotes?
Yeah, I just published today, or got published, an article I've been working on housing at
Tufts.
It's
in today's
paper. In the daily, yeah, it's out
okay,
today.
That's awesome.
So that article, it was the first part of 2. The other one is going to be out tomorrow. It is still in the works.
Nice.
But it will be published tomorrow. And it was essentially profiling like the impact of housing shortages on campus at Tufts on the surrounding community.
Awesome.
Which recently the Daily has ran a lot of stuff about housing,
mm-hmm.
but I think the app, like the impact it's had on community members has been a less emphasized aspect of it.
Totally.
So I talked to a bunch of people who just told me about some really bad situations they've witnessed with landlords, like this guy who lives on Conwell Avenue was talking about just witnessing like a series of landlords exploiting students.
Man.
That he lives next door to.
Yeah. And so this is a non-Tufts person.
Yeah.
And so how do you get in contact with these people?
So he, Edward Butcher, is a really active member of the Somerville neighborhood.
Okay.
He founded the West Somerville Neighborhood Association.
Nice.
Yeah. he's written multiple op-eds in the Daily. So I saw one of those. And it was about housing. So I thought, this guy knows what he's talking about. And he really did. He's worked with Tufts Housing League a lot, and students mm-hmm. in that group, and recently spoke at a rally that happened on campus in November about housing and how the university needs to build an on-campus dorm. So he's really involved. He was easy
cool.
to find. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Wow. So what you talked a little bit about that, like, the Daily's been doing a lot of housing but hasn't touched on this. What, other than that, like, what made you want to write about this? Because those of you who don't know, Fina is on the feature committee. Is that what it's called? Committee?
Features team.
Team.
Yeah.
And so you get to like pick the topics you want to write about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah. So I knew that this was kind of an ongoing effort, especially with students. There's really been a rise of activism. And I think what made me want to write this article was the introduction of tiered housing. Just
yeah.
the idea that some students on campus will be paying, I think the lowest new tiered rate is around $8,200 for a year. And then the highest rate is going to be priced at Sophia Gordon and Coho, the new housing they bought, right. which is going to be $1,135 per month is what it's going to come out to for the year.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So I interviewed the Dean of Students, and I said, the Dean of Student Affairs, and I said, how do you justify this housing increase?
Yeah.
And she said that she had been talking to students, and most students on campus were paying rates of around $950, $1,000 without utilities, without water, without Wi-Fi. So, you know, once you add in those utilities, probably going to get to around that. So it's pretty much on par with what students are paying off campus.
Hmm.
So I conducted a survey, actually got almost 250 respondents, 244.
Oh, that's unreal.
Yeah, I think, you know, this topic is very personal to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And including all utilities, the average from all of those respondents was around $890 a month.
So this is, these are only off-campus people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So I asked people who are either going to be or currently on campus or will be next year.
Got it.
And so that is, you know, almost, it's over $200 lower
yeah.
than what she's saying is appropriate
oh, yeah.
for the area. So I think that kind of exemplified how Tufts is really creating an unrealistic market for
and the
housing.
Disconnect between the
right.
administration and the students.
Right.
That's really unbelievable.
I know. So that was a little shocking. I also then was trying to figure out how many people can get on campus housing, because the interesting aspect of it is that most students do want to move off campus.
Right.
It's nicer to live in your own house, to have a kitchen.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of that comes from, too, the lack of availability that Tufts has
totally.
Of appealing upperclassmen housing. Because mm-hmm. I do think if there were more, like, Hillsides apartments, more Sophia
yeah.
Gordons, like, people would want to live
exactly.
in those.
Like, I personally wanted to move off campus because the on-campus things, like you said, don't have the amenities that the off-campus has. A kitchen, living space, living with your friends.
Right.
But all they have to do is just make more apartment-style things where, like, I would love to not have to, like, call a landlord to fix my heating instead of, like, having the administration take care of it or, like,
right.
not shovel my drive-it. You know, there's, like, tons of benefits of being on campus that I would want.
Right.
Just silly.
No, and it's really shocking the more you talk to students about their experiences off-campus housing, like how many horror stories you hear about landlords. Or there was an investigative piece in June in the commencement issue about a student whose house became infested with mold. the landlord wouldn't fix it. And she already had health problems and felt like it was exacerbating it. So they all had to move out in the middle of the semester. They had to move into one of 9 emergency rooms that are available on campus in Wren in the middle of the year, but none of them had a meal plan. They didn't have a kitchen in Wren. They had a lease that had been signed as a contract with the landlord that they had to figure out all of the Wi-Fi, gas, utilities. Right. So it was a mess. Yeah. And like the more you look into it, the more you see things like that are just completely unregulated because the administration is kind of throwing students into the market. So that's really what inspired me to write it.
Awesome. And I wonder like if Tufts was better about providing on-campus housing at reasonable rates, we wouldn't have to drive up off-campus rates. So local residents and lower income people who used to inhabit Somerville and Medford can no longer afford to live here. Right. And that's like a whole other topic, I guess. But I heard someone said like very well that if NYU can afford to provide on-campus housing all 4 years for all students in the most expensive place to live in this country, then like Tufts can figure it out in a suburb of Boston.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I don't know.
Yeah. No, I agree. I was also, Edward was also telling me, you know, the Tufts dining workers used to live around campus. They can't live here anymore. Yeah. Like they have to commute 40, 50 minutes to get here. Yeah. Or a lot of landlords also will recognize if you have a unit that has one family in it, they can afford a certain rate. But if you have four or five students who are already attending a private university that all have individual incomes from their family, they can charge higher rates.
Oh, yeah.
So it's really like directly causing the area to get more expensive.
And landlords do this crazy thing where they either charge such high rates for a house that has more rooms and that students need to like sneak extra people in, or they just charge like they allow more residents to be in the house than what is legal for Somerville laws. So the rates are just like 40, 50% higher than what it really should be for the Somerville laws that are in place to keep this under control.
Right.
And people are just abusing the system. And if everyone just buys into abusing it, you can't like choose a house that doesn't abuse it because you just won't find a house.
Right. Or there's also the system that we have of signing leases a year before they start in October.
Unreal.
And that is also created because that's already going on. So if you're entering the housing market, you can't say, no, I don't like this, I'm going to wait.
Right.
Because then you might not have a house.
Right.
And the other thing is the housing lottery for on-campus housing, if you do want it as a junior, takes place in the spring.
Right.
And many of those leases are getting signed in October or as early as September. So it really doesn't leave a lot of options.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
It is.
Man, well, shout out to Fina for like doing this hard work and cranking out these beautiful daily articles.
We'll see if anyone listens to me. I didn't really get the vibe when talking to the Dean of Student Affairs that it was her favorite topic to discuss.
But. Yeah. And I'm sure like, hopefully, given benefit of the doubt, like it's a hard question, and hopefully they are like trying to put students' interests first and foremost. But
I hope so.
I hope so too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Claire, what is up with your life?
Oh my gosh.
For those of you who don't know, Claire and I live in the same house, in the same apartment too.
We do indeed.
And something I've loved to see this semester is that Claire was super nervous about cooking and providing food for herself, but she has really figured it out, I
would say.
Yeah. Love to hear
it. I would not like to tell you what I have for lunch today. I'm so out of food that I have a Tupperware of Cheerios and a Tupperware of cherry tomatoes.
Okay.
That is my lunch for today.
Oh, happy college, everyone.
But I cooked a chicken.
Heck yeah, yeah.
That was a new venture.
Like a whole, like,
No, like part of a chicken.
Okay, like that was pieces just, of
yeah,
chicken.
Pieces of chicken. I know that's like a pretty
chicken.
No, that's, so what'd you do with your chicken?
I put it on a stove with some oil.
Heck
and
yeah.
And also seasoned it a little bit with things I found in the cupboard.
Nice.
And then I kind of burnt it because I was worried I was going to like undercook it. So the kitchen was a little smoky, but I found that there's a fan underneath the microwave
there is.
On top of the stove.
Oh, yeah.
So I did that. And then I ate it and it was great.
Really learning.
That's great.
You know, I'm really learning things. I'm trying to move past. Normally my lunch is like a peanut butter and jelly every day, you know? Yeah. But like at least like for dinners, I made dal the other night, which was really fun.
Yes, how'd that go? I wasn't around.
It was good. It's like not, like, you know, you go to a restaurant, they give you like real tasting dal, but like it was like edible.
Yeah.
And like that's, you know, my, it also helps that my standards are really low. So yeah. I'm like, meet my standards of like, this is an acceptable food. Yeah. It's just like, my baseline is cereal. So like, as long as it's like, oh, it's warmer than cereal. This is more nutrition than cereal. That's really
probably more filling too.
You know what? Yeah. Even when I do have cereal for dinner, you don't like feel satisfied. You know?
Even when I do have cereal.
I've recently had a cereal dinner as well.
Yeah.
Oh, I can relate. I've really been trying. Yeah. I've been doing well most times.
Mm-hmm.
It's just hard. Yeah.
You have to feed yourself every day.
Every single day.
The thing for me is like the time.
Yeah.
Like you can, I like buy all these wonderful vegetables and then it's like, oh yeah, that's cauliflower takes 40 minutes to cook. Well, I don't have that.
Or
tonight,
even like
so.
I'll have all these ambitious plans, but then if I don't get to them in time and then they go bad, it's like, it's how do you figure out like when is the next time I'm gonna go shopping and like how do I get enough? So just like basic adulting questions I've never had to ask myself before. So.
And it's also hard cooking for one, like, I guess it kind of makes sense in college where we're all like very limited budgets and very different eating styles and different schedules.
Yeah.
But I would like dream for myself a housing situation like post-grad in which like we could have a lot of like communal food where someone's like, I'll cook dinner tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And you just cook dinner together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Big surprise, my boyfriend's house actually has that system.
Really?
It has been functionally operating for 8 months.
Wow. Yes. Wow. Do tell about their system.
Basically, a group of them go shopping, and I think the reason it works is because some of them really like cooking.
Okay.
So it's mostly like three people are on a rotating shift of cooking a lot of the dinners.
Is Oliver one of them?
He is.
Okay, nice.
He actually is.
Wow.
It's usually I'll see a photo of just a lot of meat.
Yeah.
Like a full stove of meat. Like sizzling. But it seems to be working for them.
Yeah.
Because it's been going on since they moved in June.
Wow.
And I haven't really heard of anyone else making that happen.
Huh.
So I'm pretty impressed.
Yeah. I am also impressed. I like, I know people that did communal groceries only for staples like rice, eggs, milk, like maybe common vegetables or something.
Yeah.
But never like full cooking cooperative.
Yeah. I think the groceries can be tricky though, because some people will always have more than other people.
Yeah.
Some people will want to pay less.
Right.
Right.
And just like, like I'm a person who I don't drink coffee, but if everyone drank coffee, it would be like really good to just do like communal coffee, communal milk, communal eggs. But I eat like so many eggs that I would feel bad.
Right.
Or like lettuce is a good one to do communal because you like save if you buy it in bulk.
But then like compared to, I lived in a suite last year and we had a tiny fridge and there were 10 of us living there and there were probably like 8 gallons of milk at one time in the fridge.
It's
just like
it's so silly.
So unnecessary.
Yeah. Our fridge also in our abode has like a bunch of half gallons.
Yeah.
And it's like, we should just buy gallons.
Yeah. Yeah. We've actually, that has happened. The milk has happened communally for us. But it's the only thing. We have so many dietary restrictions in my house.
Oh,
it's impossible.
Bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I eat nuts, you know, every day of my life. Olivia, my housemate, is deathly allergic to all nuts. Sammy and I are both like lactose intolerant.
Right.
And Sammy's mom recently mailed her an entire shoebox full of Trader Joe's nuts. And I saw it and I was like, wow, that is great. And Sammy
for
goes, yep, they're communal. And then looks at Olivia and is like, sorry.
Yeah.
These will be for the rest
away.
Of us.
Yeah.
So that just, I don't know if communal cooking will ever happen with us. But it's been a fun experiment for me to try to feed myself.
Yeah.
I'll take the successes over the occasional bowls of cereal.
Yeah.
At night.
And then, because that's the whole thing, cooking for other people, that's a whole nourishment.
Yeah.
Like, if I can get to the point where, like, I'm satisfyingly cooking for myself, then maybe I'll make food for other people.
Well, that's the tricky thing of moving off campus, too, is you don't really have the aspect of, oh, I can just casually meet all the people I want in
a
dining hall.
It's so hard.
You either have to go out and eat something, or you have to be like, I can cook for you at my home.
Like, come over.
Yeah, while I cook the food, entertain you.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a weird dynamic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and definitely so much more time consuming.
It is. It is.
Yeah. I've been I think something that helps me is when I get to the point of cooking, I'm so hungry that it's important mm-hmm. for me to buy a lot of snack items, like just an apple I can cut up, yeah. bananas, like pretzels, and hummus, carrots, like little things that aren't gonna be a meal. But right when I get starving, it's like, okay, I'll just take a lot of carrots and hummus, and then I'll be full enough to start cooking.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Which is not a concept that I otherwise would have wanted to implement.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the dining hall, I'm not like, oh, gotta do my carrots and hummus before I start eating.
Gotta pre-game yeah. the whole meal.
Gotta lay out some appetizers.
But it's kind of nice to like have more control over what it is that I eat.
Yeah.
Versus going to a dining hall.
I would agree.
So, Molly,
yeah.
what has been going on recently in your life?
Particularly
your
on?
Athletic career.
Oh, my. Yeah. Oh, yes. My very serious athletic career.
I still
career.
Haven't heard the rundown on the tournament
okay.
this weekend.
Yeah, let's talk. Hopefully our competitors aren't going to be listening because we're going to get into some details. out of our 10 listeners right now, I highly doubt that that Pitt or Carleton are listening. Okay, so for those of you who don't know, I play on the women's frisbee team here at Tufts. So do Claire and Fina. We are all in the women's program. And so the A team, is that a weird noise you hear? I also hear a weird noise. Okay, well, listeners, if you want to call in or text me what if you hear a weird noise, let me know. Call in and I'll put you right on air. So the EWO went to North Carolina for the Queen City Tune-Up Tournament. And we went south, and it was horrible weather. It was like 48 degrees, and then got up to like 50 one day, but pretty cold. We were seated fourth, we were seated fifth, and we played. How it works is like we were in a pool with the fifth seeded team, with the fourth seeded team. We were fifth, and we actually beat them on Universe, which means like. The last point you're like tied and whoever wins that point wins the game. And it was pretty exciting against Ohio State. Pretty chippy game, I would say. We had one point that took 34 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is exhausting.
There were two timeouts called.
Oh no.
It was pretty crazy. And then finally Margot let a huge hook and Tuna came down with it in the end zone. So that was pretty hype to finish off that point. But then we went into Sunday feeling pretty good. Won our quarterfinal game against UNC Wilmington. Here's the thing about this team. They're like not ranked very high in the tournament. They were ranked 15th, but they made it to quarterfinals, which is top 8. In this next tournament, they're ranked like super low that we're going to in a week and a half, but they're so good. Like, we only beat them on Universe and they were up on us for a while.
Wow.
So we're really happy we beat that team.
So a lot of close games.
Yeah, a lot of close games. We had two Universe points and then some close calls otherwise. And then we went into semis, played Pitt, who University of Pittsburgh. They are very good.
very athletic team.
Yeah, very athletic. Like, they made it to the semifinals of the national championship last year. And are just, like, an incredible team. Have a lot of girls who play on U24 Worlds, which is kind of like Junior Olympics, I would equate it to in the ultimate world. And so we lost to them, and then we played Carleton for third place and just got wiped. We were pretty tired, and it's like a kind of like a consolation game, so it was like hard mentally.
Right.
Overall, a lot of great team time. Like, we really bonded as a team. I feel like first tournament, you kind of walk away being like, oh, yeah, now I feel super comfortable with every single person, and we feel like a team. So that was cool. And, yeah, that was my weekend. Pretty hyped.
Coming out of it, how are you feeling?
How am I feeling? I feel pretty good. my role on the team is like a big question mark, I would say. I definitely like play more than I did last year and definitely more than freshman year. And I'm like pretty happy with my performance, but I don't know if I'm happy with like the role I played. I want to like be able to contribute more and not necessarily like playing more points, but like when I am out there, just like being more active. And that's kind of my big reflection. Unfortunately, we had two players, Margo and Claire, really got banged up and now are like injured.
Which sucks. What happened?
Yeah, so Claire was just like going up the line and there was like really uneven ground and she misstep and like rolled her ankle.
Oh, no.
And it's on this, she had a big ankle injury last summer. So it's just the same ankle as like on top of scar tissue. So that's tough. And then Margo got like cleated in the leg, I think, and got this really bad bruise and then was in a lot of pain, but just like kept playing. And so there was just like a lot of internal bleeding. So now she has a pretty serious bruise, and which like her whole leg is pretty swollen. But hopefully she'll be back before our next tournament, but we shall see.
Shoot.
Yeah.
When is your next tournament?
Not this weekend, but the next.
Exciting.
Yeah. Where is that one?
In Virginia. Yep. To be honest, I've been like a little bit distracted by my schoolwork, just because I don't know if it's distracted.
When you're in college and yeah. your school distracts you from your frisbee.
Or
how dare you prioritize?
I know, how dare way. I? Just because like being gone, I'm going to Montreal this weekend. So being gone 3 weekends in a row and not doing homework on weekends is like so impossible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
As
like,
opposed to last semester.
Yeah, very true. Claire and I were in Madrid last semester, which is pretty hype.
Is there not a lot of homework on weekends? On for weekends. You guys?
I think I traveled most weekends, yeah. So I didn't really do much.
To be honest, I had homework.
Really, on the weekends?
Yeah, definitely did homework.
I definitely had homework while abroad.
Oh, all of us were abroad last fall.
Yeah.
So I would love to hear, I think like I've personally heard like very good recaps of yours, but for our listeners, maybe just like a high and a low and something you learned. Whoever wants to start.
Okay, well, high and a low. I can definitely think of my low.
Yeah, wait, tell us like where you went, what program.
Okay. So I, it was a good program. It's just very interesting. I studied abroad in Madrid. I was staying with the host family there. I was doing the Tufts in Madrid program.
Nice.
While I was there, I did a lot of traveling in Spain. I went to Ibiza, which was fun.
Unreal.
The beach was really fun there. Took some Advil and some lactaid pills. So I took a lactaid pill in Ibiza.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Crazy.
And I went to Granada. I'm blanking. I haven't really thought about that much. I went to Portugal, Morocco, Amsterdam. It was really, really fun. It was good. My high was, I play guitar, and while I was there, I was taking flamenco guitar lessons, which was really fun and really different than anything I'd done before. And it was also just, like, such a great practice of Spanish, because everyone there was just, like, these fluent Spanish speakers. My teacher's name was Fernando, and he had, like, this, like, silver mullet. And his name was, like, a curly silver mullet, and he talked so fast and played guitar even faster, and it was really fun, but very much over my head. My low was getting a concussion.
Yep.
No.
Yeah, so I used to play rugby, so I got concussed from that pretty badly, and then I just walked into a low-hanging doorway in a bookstore and got concussed in my last week abroad. I was gonna go to Brussels to meet Molly.
Yeah, Claire and I were gonna have a little adventure, but unfortunately, it was not in the cards.
You had to eat all the waffles for me.
Yeah.
So. Did you still go?
Yeah, I went by myself.
How was it?
It was amazing. Yeah. Sorry, not to rub it in.
It's fine. Please tell me how amazing it was.
I love solo traveling, and I would say Brussels is like a great place to solo travel because it's pretty small and lots of like infrastructure for tourism. Pretty safe too. And just like all I did was eat waffles, fries, drink some beer.
Sounds great.
Yeah, that's about it.
Wow.
Yeah. So, Fien, tell us about your semester.
Yeah, so I was doing a language immersion program in China with Middlebury College, and I was going to do the Tufts in Beijing program, but my mom was like, you have asthma, you're stupid, you're not going to be able to breathe for the whole semester.
My mom was like, you're stupid.
Maybe I was paraphrasing a little bit. She's very cynical of the decision.
Yeah.
So I last minute had to look around, saw that Middlebury had programs. I had heard of the college Middlebury before, so I signed up for one of those without really knowing what I was getting myself into.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, I got there. I was in Kunming, which is in the southwest of China, near Tibet and Myanmar. So it's kind of near the border, and it's near Sichuan, which is known for having the spiciest food in China. So that really carried over to where I was too. Like, one funny thing was during meals, you would often look over and the person next to you would just silently have tears rolling down their face from how spicy it was. God. And your nose starts to run too.
Oh, yeah.
So you had to have tissues on hand at all times.
Holy bucket.
The summer I spent in India was the same. I was in southern India, where it was like near Hyderabad, that has like super spicy food. You just cry through meals.
Yeah, you do.
Learn, like, it's like clearing your any congestion. No after dinner, no more.
Yeah,
just,
no more.
Your face, your face
just red.
It gets red.
It's like a physical.
Sometimes you
endeavor.
Start to sweat. Yeah. You really see all of the effects of spicy food. It's like a science experiment.
So
one of the, I'm trying to think, the high of my program was probably, there were, I think, two aspects. One of them was an autumn break trip that we went on, hiking. We backpacked through two small towns in the mountains around Kunming, where we were in Yunnan, and then spent 2 days on a trail through a gorge, which I had been marketed to me as the world's largest gorge in China. But then after that, I came back. I was looking it up, because I was telling someone about abroad. I discovered that it is objectively not the world's largest gorge, and that was made up.
So who told you it was the world's
largest? It was all over the place.
Like, at the site?
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Propaganda.
And maybe we had just circulated among ourselves, this is the world's largest gorge, but it was just factually inaccurate.
That's hilarious.
It did feel very large. There were not a lot of railings in most of the sites, and our trail was built into the side of the cliff, so there was a long fall if you, you know, happened to trip. And that was also interesting because on our break, everyone in the program adamantly continued speaking Chinese because we had a language pledge. So it was a super new experience to be on a hike through a gorge exclusively speaking Chinese, especially because one person in my program got like severe altitude sickness during the hike and started telling me she couldn't see. Almost like I was a little sketched out because there was a large drop into the gorge, which is almost the world's largest gorge. Yeah, and no one would speak any English during this scenario either. So it was all resolved in Chinese, except for one moment where she wouldn't tell me what was going on and repeated the same word that I didn't know in Chinese 6 times while we were like on the edge of this gorge. Like, could be a life threatening scenario.
Yeah.
And finally, someone else came over and said the word in English. But
what was the word?
The word was just dizzy. She was super dizzy, but she wouldn't say it. And I don't know that word in Chinese. My life experiences had not prepared me for this situation. No. So that really illustrated the extent to which the people in my program were dedicated to the pledge.
Yeah.
Because it was also, there was 6 of us without the program. No one was watching us. Like, no one would ever have known.
Right.
But, you know, we adamantly maintained that. But it was a really cool experience.
Yeah.
And we got to stay in some guest houses along the trail. So that was really cool. I think the low, really my whole first month while I was there was very hard.
Yeah.
Because adjusting to it was, I don't know, it was the environment I was in was with a lot of other people who were already very good at Chinese. Don't know how that happened. I was so bad. I just kind of threw myself into it. But then I think the new high came. I like kind of crossed this threshold around September, like the end of September, October, where I realized that I could do this. I was having conversations with people.
Heck yeah.
Didn't always understand, you know, 50%, 60% of what they were saying, but I could communicate.
Yeah.
Like, my program traveled to this town called Sizhou, it was near Kunming, and they sent us on this assignment where individually we had to solo go through the town and interview people about a certain topic, get their answers.
That's crazy.
And then when we got back to Kunming, we had to present a report on our findings to the entire program. And these reports, they always filmed them. They would bring in all of the teachers. They invited the roommates. So there's usually like 20 to 30 fluent Chinese speakers watching
right.
with the camera, as well as everyone in the program who also right. had to come watch.
Right.
So I was tweaking a little bit. Because I couldn't really have conversations in Chinese, and suddenly they were like, you have to retain all this information, and it actually went fine.
Okay.
I made the presentation. People were, you know, I think it made sense. Heads were nodding. I was communicating something. So that was a big moment where I realized that I was going to be fine.
Yeah.
And I think beyond that, it was a high to actually be able to learn enough Chinese to get around.
Yeah.
And to exclusively express myself in the language for the entire time that I was there.
That's unreal.
Yeah.
Wow. That is so awesome that everyone on that program was just like, we are here to learn.
Yeah.
And this pledge is going to get us there. And if that means I'm on the edge of almost the world's largest gorge feeling dizzy and I need to tell Fina that how I'm feeling, I am not going to say it in English.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if I was really celebrating that at the time.
Right.
But like, in retrospect,
definitely scary, but I think it definitely speaks worlds to the dedication of learning.
Because that's how you learn, is like being forced to be in that situation where that's the only option.
Yeah.
Right. No, it's definitely easier for me to appreciate now. Because I used to, like, in my Chinese classes at Tufts, I started it here. So I had no, like, level of comfort with the language or in class. But I used to always be so anxious. But now I'm, like, sitting there. People will speak English to the teacher. And I kind of look at them and I'm like, whoa. Yeah. Like, I have been trained to not
like,
think
don't
this
do
is
that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it just feels way more chill. And, like, I feel like I actually can have conversations with people, which is so far from where I was before. So that was definitely worth it. It was just a very different experience from what I think a lot of people had.
Definitely.
Yeah, because in Madrid, if you wanted to just speak English the entire time, you could definitely find people.
Yeah, so I was on a program in which there was no minimum language experience. Mm. So we had this guy from Nepal. His name is Dawas. He's actually like a straight homie. I love Dawas. If you're listening right now, Dawas, let's talk. But he, like, grew up in Nepal, he goes to University of Rochester for college. Like, didn't really, like, grew up kind of learning English, but really, like, didn't fully, like, learn English till getting to college, right? So definitely doesn't know Spanish. And then he just, like, gets thrown into this environment where their program is structured that's possible. Like, our engineering classes are in English. You do have to take a Spanish class, but they have multiple levels. And then you can opt to take your other elective in English also. So it was really the wide range. We had everything from, like, Dawas to like heritage speakers and everything in between. And so it was very interesting, the dedication to Spanish, or really lack thereof. Everyone, like when we were with each other, definitely English, like for sure English. When we were out like trying to talk to restaurants or go about our daily lives, it really depended on the person. I like for sure tried to do Spanish. Half the people were just like living with people in the program, so they weren't speaking Spanish at home either. And I like was fortunate enough that I did get to speak Spanish at home. And there's only like this one guy, Makai, who was so dedicated to speaking Spanish that even with us, he would only speak Spanish. And he improved so much. And like, I like to think that I also improved, but I definitely like could have improved a lot more. I think, like, I was talking with him, like, the first week, and we were, like, kind of on the same. He was, like, a little bit more advanced than me, but there was no, like, huge disconnect. And then by the end of the program, he could have, like, full fluent conversations with locals and, like, not be, like, excuse me, can you repeat that again? Yeah. And so I think it's really just a discipline matter. And I'm happy with like the amount of discipline I had, but I think there's always room for more.
Right.
Yeah. Unless you're Fina.
Unless you're
Fina. That's definitely
a
trade-off. That was the other interesting thing is you were just saying you really enjoy solo travel.
Yeah.
I started to really like to take a lot of time for myself on my program because that is often awesome. Like being with people was exhausting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because we could only speak Chinese.
Right. And it was think that much more about right. every single thing you say.
Everything.
Yeah.
So I would go on these long walks. We were near a really big lake. And the
That's
lake
awesome.
The lake was just like it was popping. Like I would go down there. People were often there was this old like bearded dude who was always painting calligraphy on the ground
what?
With water.
So cool.
Yeah, and there would be a squad of like other old people watching him. there was always dancing, like at any hour of the day.
Really?
Yeah,
what type
usually
of dancing.
It's like retired people
okay.
who just chill in the park and dance.
Okay.
Like I started to say the same guys all the time.
Would you be like a great life?
Yeah, and they let you join if you want. But it was interesting because sometimes, like, we would, they also, it was always, like, very upbeat, fast music.
Yeah.
Like, it was kind of like EDM sometimes. But
we would
go over and join in or try to because it looked pretty simple, but then realize they all already knew the moves because they were there every day.
Got
and they
it.
Were very gracious, like, they wanted the random foreigners to join.
Yeah.
But it was really, like, a lifestyle for them.
Got it.
So I would take, like, laps around this park. There was also a Starbucks. Like, that was the other interesting thing. I think I might have been telling you this. Mm-hmm. Like, I really started,
I think we talked about
because
that.
It was so intensely focused on being in China, speaking
yeah.
Chinese, I started to really seek out, like, escapes from that.
Yeah.
So I would go to the Starbucks.
Yeah.
It would be, like, December in China, but they don't celebrate Christmas very
right.
much. I would go to the Starbucks. Jingle Bells is blasting.
Amazing.
There's like streamers, Christmas
wow.
decorations, snow globes, like
American
chestnut
oasis.
Lattes. Yeah. So I would just camp out in there. Like they knew me because you could go around this lake and then chill at the Starbucks for a little bit, not think about Chinese, just like do your own thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was something that I really started to use as an escape. I just found that like, or I would listen to podcasts for like hours and just go on strolls.
Yeah.
Because there really was a lot to see. I don't know. There was so much life like outside.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That is very awesome.
I feel like one of my favorite sport is people watching, if I can call that a sport.
Really?
I'm just like finding, like even around here, but especially like in Madrid, just walking around the city, just being like, what's your life? What are you doing?
Oh,
not
yeah.
in like a stalkery way, but like in a, like a...
Right.
There's in just a like, genuine curiosity
yeah,
way.
Yeah, right. Like there's just so many rhythms of life existing in the same space.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Oh.
That is so beautiful, Claire. What was the weather like in Kunming?
Really good. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's called the Spring City.
Wow.
Actually, when we got there, it was a little crazy because it was the rainy season.
Okay.
So it would basically, it wasn't humid, which was awesome. Because Beijing, other cities in China are very humid in the summer.
Yeah.
But it would just pour rain for like 15 minutes, any interval throughout the day. One time.
Okay.
It would pour.
Okay.
So if you were outside during that, you were going to be soaking wet.
Okay.
In 10 seconds.
Okay.
That lasted for like a month. That was interesting because we only could dry laundry outside. There was no space in our room to do it.
Oh, no.
So it was a constant gamble. You had to really like look at the weather forecast and like time it with the rain.
And then pull it in right before.
Yeah. People would message our group chat. Like the roommates would be like, hey, it's going to rain. Pull in your laundry. So we'd all like run back to try to get the clothes to dry.
Yeah.
But then after that, it started, the skies like cleared around October. And it was just blue skies, like mid-60s, high-60s every day.
What?
Yeah.
That's unreal.
It was great. The one downside was it started to get kind of cold at night, and there was no heating anywhere, like in any of the dorms, in any of the classrooms. So I would sleep in like full, like, I don't know. I would wear a fleece. I would wear thick socks because there was no heating. But during the day, it was really nice.
Yeah.
That was a huge pro of where I went because I essentially did choose that area for the climate and the air.
Because and you said, I remember when you thinking about location, like, Beijing is obviously such a metropolis, but Kunming has so much, like, cool nature around. And I remember you saying, like, that's something I'm going to want to, like, be exposed to when I'm
there.
It
was so true. Yeah. Because it's the other interesting thing was that no one in the U.S. had heard of Kunming. But if I asked someone from China, they'd say, oh, really small city. It was 6 million people on the low end, the low end of estimates. And it really, like, we were in a huge, like, area of urban sprawl. And it was also the, I don't know if urban planning really happened when it was built because the vibe was kind of just, like, huge skyscrapers spread out everywhere for miles.
Wow.
So you were really kind of in it. Like, it's sprawled for so far.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was no really, like, cultural center, like downtown. Like, yeah. If we wanted to go out, there was like scattered locations.
Got it.
So every time I was in the mountains, I realized like, wow, I'm actually living in a huge city.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know, I've lived near cities my whole life, but it's never been like I actually live in, like, surrounded by huge buildings all the time.
Yeah. Right. I also felt like I had an amazing location in Madrid, and I was just like, living in a huge metropolis in Spain. And that was awesome. Like, I would walk, like, I joined a gym that was like a 6-minute walk, and I would just walk by like the tallest hotel in Madrid on my way, you know? And it was just like these like huge skyscrapers, and it I liked it a lot.
Right. Yeah. Right. No, that was a cool thing too, is we lived in this neighborhood that was right on a street near the college. So we were kind of in a college town of Kunming.
Yeah.
But every time you walked onto this one street, like, there's people roasting tofu. They had this thing called stinky tofu on the same stove every day. But sometimes I would walk by in the morning before it was open, and they were blowtorching, like, concrete on the same stove. So that was interesting, yeah.
Okay.
Didn't really eat the tofu.
You should have tried it.
I tried it once.
Okay.
It's stinky.
Okay.
As the name. Yeah. Interesting is the word I would use. Or like, there was the same person roasting chestnuts every day. Mm-hmm. They're the same two dogs kind of having a non-consensual relationship every day on my way to class.
Yep.
Also, one time I was walking down the street, massive apartment fire is just going on.
What?
And there are like a huge cluster of 50 people on the street watching.
You can, we have a caller calling in right now. Caller, it's a 319 number, which is Iowa City. So I will just put you right up if I can figure out how to do this. Press this. Caller, are you with us?
Molly, hi.
Hi. Who is this?
Cece.
Oh, hey, Cece. What is up?
How do you know? I'm just listening to your radio.
Oh my gosh, thanks for listening, Cece. Do you want to tell...
Am I on the air?
Oh yeah, you're on the air. do you want to tell everyone who you are, where you're at right now, and how we know each other?
Okay, I'm Cece. I'm Molly's friend from Iowa City, and I'm calling from Georgetown.
Amazing.
University. Go Hoyas.
Go Hoyas. How's your day?
Wait, oh my God.
JC's
listening.
JC is another one of our high school friends. Yeah, so Cece and I went to high school together. And wow, true friends, Cece, for calling in.
I can't. Yeah, I want to also give a shout out to JC Weathers, another Iowa City girl who's also listening and just texted me saying that she hears me on the air. So
amazing.
Are there a lot of people listening to this?
Well, we have 9 mobile streamers and one real radio listener. So someone in their car is probably tuned in to 91.5.
Okay, well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I just wanted to say, love what you're doing.
Thanks.
And I signed my lease in Boston. So.
You did. Amazing.
Yes.
Yes, so.
Yes, I'll see you soon.
Yes, I will see you soon. Thanks for calling, Cece.
Of course. Thanks for having me on. Yep. Chatting with Molly. Or what is it?
Chatting with Molly.
Is it Chatting with Molly?
Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. All righty. Wow. Yeah, amazing. So that was my friend Cece, and she is moving to Boston after graduation because she's a senior. And she just signed a lease. Yes, you did meet her. Cool. So now we have to, we get to run a little PSA because Tufts is an education radio. So this is going to be a little public service announcement about high blood pressure. Let's see if I can get this going. I know what I have to do.
145 over 92, and then I had a heart attack.
182 over 100, and I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest, and then a stroke. Everything changed. It felt like my life was over.
This is what high blood pressure sounds like.
You might not feel its symptoms, but the results from a heart attack or stroke are far from invisible or silent.
150 over 90, and I had a stroke. If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
180 over 110, and I had a stroke. And I'm 33, so I never see this coming.
If you've come off your treatment plan, get back on it, or talk with your doctor to create an exercise, diet, and medication plan that works for you. Go to loweryourhbp.org.
Head to toe, everything's changed. Head to toe.
Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
Awesome. Well, thanks, American Medical Association and Ad Council. That about does it. I'm going to reiterate CC's shout out to JC, because JC has been a avid listener this week, and she's at work right now, so really special of her to tune in. And yeah, that about does it. Next up, we have Rosano Radio at 1 p.m., and I'm sure he'll put on a great show for you. So, peace and love, everyone. Happy Wednesday. Guest, do you guys have anything to say?
No, thanks for having us.
Thank you for allowing us to chat with Molly for an hour. It's an
honor. Well, thanks for being on. Let's see if this works.
Straight ahead, oh. Hey, this is Christian.
And Ryan.
From Group Love, and you're listening to 91.5 FM.
WMFO Medford. Freeform Radio.